Philadelphia, Asheville 103.7 on your FM radio, and streaming at WPVMFM.org.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. We come to you every week at 103.7, or you can stream us at WPVMFM.org. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our guests today are Pancho Bermejo and Amy Cantrell. They are co-directors at Beloved Asheville. Beloved Asheville is a nonprofit organization powered by individual donors, people from the streets, and volunteers from all over Asheville and Buncombe County who have come together to end homelessness, poverty, and racism. Pancho is an activist and Indigenous Latinx community organizer and is also Beloved Asheville's media expert. And he has been given awards for his community work by the Asheville Area Arts Council and CoThink. Amy Cantrell has been active in community organizing work for more than 30 years. She is the founder of Beloved Asheville, and she has spent 3 decades working to build intersectional community, creating mutual aid networks, and creating social change. Amy and Pancho, welcome to the show.
So good to be here, McNair.
Thank you for inviting us.
You are welcome. Amy, it's been a few years since you've been with us on A Better World, and I would like our listeners who may not be familiar with you to know some background of Beloved Asheville. Can you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. We're thrilled to particularly be on A Better World because it so fits our value system where we indeed are working for a better world for everyone. One of the things that Beloved really aspires to is working on building community as a mission. It's one of the things that we saw that was really missing was somebody really purposefully, intentionally creating community. And what we mean by that is those critical connections of community that really become the glue of society. So particularly important where most of us navigate the crises that we go through via our family and friends, our community, or also find our biggest joys in community. And so we saw a real lack of folks really intentionally doing that work. And we felt like it was very powerful and positive to really bring people together from every walk of life to create intentional and innovative solutions to some of our biggest challenges like systemic racism, climate change, the affordable housing crisis, healthcare, and poverty. And we know that to do that sort of organically in community really helps us to begin to shape the world that we all dream of living in, a world where everybody thrives. So we say we're trying to work to create equity, opportunity, home, and health for all in our Western North Carolina home.
Would you call that the basic mission? Are there certain parts of the population, segments of the population that you are geared towards assisting?
Yes, that's the deep part of our mission is that we want to really work with people from all walks of life. And so, Pancho, I would love for you to share more about what you see as our deep and collective passion and mission in this world.
Yeah, I guess like when you were saying, then part of the show is called Better World. I was thinking then is how myself and Amy met. And since then, we have been working together because we have the same vision, even though we don't have the same backgrounds. We have the same vision, then we have a big compromise and a big vision of seeing the community being in a better place. And I think then part of the mantra is looking for this something very very contagious. Then it's passion about doing it, passion about not talking about it, like talking about it when, at the same time that we are doing the work and making change, positive change in the community. And we have been inspiring many people, and we are very lucky that we find mirrors everywhere that we go. People that are very passionate about doing change, people that are very passionate about helping others and looking for ways to make of this a better community for all. So probably this is part of the big mission, like being very contagious about this passion that we have to make better the world, starting from our community.
Is Beloved Asheville, are you affiliated with any denomination or church?
So Amy is a pastor, only I feel that for us to really be very inclusive in our community, we have to really have different people and accept different people from different beliefs. Like I was saying, Amy is a pastor and I have different beliefs, religious beliefs than her. And for us, have been very important to let people know that everybody's welcome in this way of life. And it's, like I was saying before, trying to make of this community a better place. So I don't know how you describe this, Amy.
We're a nonprofit organization. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, grassroots community. Many people just call Beloved my family. That's how they would describe us. We're certainly made up of lots of different wonderful individuals and families, predominantly people who are Black, Indigenous, people of color, people of low wealth. And also we have community groups that we're connected with, including faith communities and businesses and neighborhood groups. And our goal is to really weave community together in a very powerful way. One of the things that profoundly, you know, touched me and made me really think about our work was a study that I learned about. It was conducted at the end of 2019 by North Carolina State University. And they simply asked North Carolinians, what is your number one struggle? And the number one struggle came back, disconnection. And think about it, this is right before the pandemic. So, you know, how much more the feeling of disconnection people had during that time. But, you know, what I really understood from that is that people felt disconnected from one another. From their neighborhoods, their neighbors, from the institutions meant to serve them, perhaps from their place or purpose within community. And so that became very powerful in terms of thinking about our mission. You know, for me, it was a light bulb. Like, this is what we do, is that we create those critical connections. And so interesting that this is what we hear, I think, from so many people, is that what Beloved offers is this opportunity for people to feel connected, to feel like they can use their gifts towards something powerful and positive in terms of creating community change. And what we've seen from sort of that alchemy, as it were, an art of community making, are these really amazing sort of innovations and community projects that are really seen as national models. You know, people from across the country are calling us and coming to see what we're doing here. And it's because all of the work is really coming out of the heart of community and coming directly from people that are impacted by community struggles and seeing each other, you know, being able to say, you know, this may not be my struggle, but it's the struggle of this person that I love, that I'm connected with in community. And so I want to stand with them. And so it's created this very powerful fusion and glue and producing some really, as I say, innovative solutions for our time.
So you're a nonprofit. Do you bring in enough funding sources to meet the needs that you are trying to address in the community?
Well, the needs are vast. Mm-hmm. I would say that. And our dreams and passions are vast. You know, the dreams of our people, of the kind of world that we want to live in, particularly require resources. And the first resource is heart and you know, human capital, people coming together and saying, we believe in each other and we believe in working together for the common good. And so, you know, we want to nurture that kind of social capital for sure. But we, you know, Beloved really functions from many, many, many individuals giving of their gifts. And certainly we get, you know, some grants and things like that. But the great majority of our resources and support really come from individuals sharing, you know, small gifts and putting those small gifts together to make a large collective impact.
We were talking before the show, you've got some sort of function coming up on May 6th.
This is our second annual Raise Another Home auction, and it benefits our Bela Villages project. We're building a really unique and innovative model of deeply affordable homes with equity, particularly as a solution to the housing crisis. And so that's coming up Saturday, May the 6th at AB Tech Mission Event Center. And then it's really a celebration. So Pancho, I don't know if you want to share more about our theme of celebrate and recreate.
Yeah, so the plan is, like Amy was saying, is the second annual action event. So last year we was able to raise money enough to build a house. So it's a house that we are building right now. So part of the event is going to be to celebrate what we did last year and start thinking in how we celebrate in the same time that we are recreating, because we know then in the housing crisis that our community is having and all the country is having, like, we're going to need many of these houses and we're going to need many of these events to recreate and create more opportunities for people to have houses or have the opportunity to own their own house or have the opportunity to have a better situation in housing. So we're going to be celebrating in different ways. We know that in our communities, different people, and it's different ways than people celebrate. So we're gonna try to incorporate the different celebration than different people in the community have. And we're gonna bring all this celebration to the room. And like I was saying, we're gonna celebrate in the same time that we are gonna be recreating.
So how can people find out more about it, Pancho?
So people can go to the website in beloveasheville.com, and there is going to be a link directly to the action event where they can buy tickets. Still, I think, around 60 or 70 tickets more. And it's going to be an action that is going to go live probably this Sunday or this Monday, so people can start bidding in the items that we're going to have to the action. And like I say, the other day I was watching a video and they were saying, not think in these items like an opportunity to have something cheap. Thinking this like an opportunity to make the possibility to create another home for a family in need or from somebody in our community that is in need of a house to live.
I want to ask you, either one can answer, it would be fine. I want to ask you about the various projects at Beloved Asheville. But before I do that, I wanted to bring up an article I read in Mountain Express. I think it was May of last year, and it said that the number of unhoused individuals had grown from 2021 to 2022 by 21% to 637 individuals. And the number was estimated to be even higher because it's difficult to count everyone who sleeps outside on any particular night. And I'm wondering, what do you attribute this increase to in our community?
Oh, yeah, I think there is many different factors. So in 2021, I don't know if you remember, then in Kenton was a big flow because people usually asking how people finish in the street. And I remember then somebody called us from Kenton. Crusoe was one of the places that was more affected. And the person that called us was a person that lost their trailer. So the river's grown too high, then the river take the trailer of care. And only in this moment, from this morning to this afternoon, she was in the streets. So I think then it's different things that happen in the life of different people that make people being in the street. Only for sure the pandemic was a big impact in many different people in the community. These 2 years that we spent like being alone, like was something happening in our brain and can be mental different problems than affect us at the time. And a lot of people lost their job, a lot of people lost their health. And on top of this, we see an increase in rent. And it's harder to find a place to rent. And it's very expensive, the rent in this city. So I know think that many people have a lot of different options than living in the streets. Because if you think somebody then working in a place then pay $10 or $15 an hour, if they don't have two jobs, they're not going to be able to pay a rent in our community. So this is why we are seeing an increase, because everything is higher now. The price of the products in the stores are higher. I remember that in one point, we went to one of the local stores and the eggs was like $10 for a dozen of eggs. So I think there is different factors that are influence this increase in the population of people that live in the streets.
Well, that article also said that during that same time period, Buncombe County's shelter capacity decreased by 74 beds. I think it went down from 634 to 560. What do you think that's the reason for that is?
Yeah, I think you know, you're asking really good questions when we look at, you know, all the ways that these systems come into play. So we, you know, the pandemic was a huge contributing factor to having less shelter beds. We have traditionally had about half the number of shelter beds to the number of people that we have experiencing homelessness or more. And so, you know, we have never had anywhere near even 500 or 600 shelter beds in the city. And it's something that, you know, recently the National Alliance on Homelessness was here in a consultancy and said we needed to add, you know, 95 shelter beds. So this is something that we've talked about and sounded the alarm about for years, you know, is that we don't have enough shelter for all the people that need shelter in our community. And that has not been sort of the prevailing narrative, which has typically been, you know, people just don't want to go to shelter. And what we know is, you know, we find many people out that can't access a shelter bed. But, you know, these statistics are very telling when we look at, you know, what really is a national housing crisis currently. Every community in this country, you know, there's no county in the country where people, you know, working, a single person working can afford for minimum wage can afford an apartment. And so that's a crisis. You know, we've seen in Asheville, I can tell you some pretty astounding statistics. You know, rent increased here by about 41.7% during the 2 years of the pandemic. Prior to that, I was giving the alarming number that rent was going up 5%. You know, so you see rent increasing from 5% during a year's time to 41% during 2 years' time is pretty intense escalation. So we are now, you know, fifth worst in the country in terms of our rent inequity. Number one highest rent in the state of North Carolina, second most gentrified country in the nation. So you look at these things, and that didn't happen overnight. You know, there's been many years of housing policy that have impacted where we are now. And that's the stuff that you don't see. It's sort of invisible. What we do see is a lot of people on the street. That's very visible. But, you know, what we don't see are, you know, decades of housing policy. Yeah, I say there's a long vein that runs through racism with the word housing on it. You know, that housing policy was utilized to uphold and extend systemic racism for many years, whether we look at redlining or urban renewal that hit here in Asheville, was the second largest land grab in the Southeast in terms of urban renewal. So African Americans lost their homes and their land and their businesses in communities like East End and Southside. And then we see, you know, many, many decades of not investing in housing stock, particularly at the federal level. So we can say in the late 70s, the Housing and Urban Development, or HUD budget, was about $81 billion. By the early 80s, it had been slashed to $18 billion. And that was the federal funding for creating housing. And so, you know, we haven't kept up with the need over time. We haven't made that investment in infrastructure. And so, you know, one of the things that we look at when we think of a better world is how are we investing in people? You know, people need a place to live. People, families mm-hmm. need a place to live. Folks who are working every day need to be able to put a roof over their heads and food on the table as just a basic, you know, human right, health care, things like that. And so, you know, how are we creating systems to create that better world that we all desire? And so, you know, in some ways, alarm bells are going off when we have this many people in our community that can't afford housing. Something's really wrong and tragic. And I'll say another really invisible group are the children. You know, we have over 700 children facing homelessness in Asheville and Buncombe County. Can't give up and hope God will
intercede. Come on. If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Amy Cantrell and Pancho Bermejo. They are co-directors of Beloved Asheville. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. So lift up your eyes, lift up your heart, singing, mercy, will we overcome this? Oh, one by one, could we turn it around? Maybe carry on just a little bit longer. And I try to give you what you need. Me and you and you and you, I just want to be free. Okay, that's the Dave Matthews Band, and the song is Mercy from the album Away from the World. And today we are talking to Amy Cantrell and Pancho Bermejo. They are co-directors at Beloved Asheville. Before the break there, we were talking about the number of unhoused people in the area and the number of children that are facing homelessness. Do you know, is the city and is the county, are they working to address this on an ongoing basis?
Sure. So there's been sort of a powerful community conversation really hatched around a consultancy that was conducted by the National Alliance to End Homelessness, really looking at Asheville and Buncombe County and really pointing up sort of where we need more infrastructure, where we lack support systems around homelessness and housing. And so, you know, one of the huge things that they said was that we need a better system, a more holistic system, where we all can sort of come around this as a community. And so that's some powerful work that's happening. We need to address the lack of shelter, that we're about 95 beds shy of the need currently. And of course that we have a huge housing crisis here. And we need to be investing in creating homes. Something that we've known for a long time, you know, since 2016, we've been developing a new model, a new way home, which we call deeply affordable housing. We want to make sure that people, you know, who work every day and are right now living in poverty, you know, elders on fixed incomes, disabled vets, communities of color have access to be able to live in a home where they can put down roots and build equity or mm-hmm. build wealth so that they can lift themselves out of poverty. And so our Beloved Villages project is doing that right now. We have a village of homes going up. We just started our sixth home and put the walls up this week. And we're building 12 homes in our first pilot village.
So is this related to the fundraiser that's coming up on May 6th?
Absolutely. This is our Raise Another Home auction and celebration. Okay. And so this is one of the ways a community can come together. This is a community-driven effort. Really came about with a tragic death of a woman who froze to death in our community back in the fall of 2016.
Yeah, I remember you talking about her last time as being kind of the impetus to get the Street Medics program going.
Yes.
Wanted to ask you about that in a minute. But first, let me ask Pancho. I'm not sure Amy and I talked about this program before or if it was even in existence, but I wanted to ask you about the Asheville en Español program. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so Asheville en Español was born in the middle of the pandemic. We have a meeting with a city when before they announced then the city is going to be closed, it's going to be a curfew because of the pandemic. So at the time, one of the requests that we ask people in the city is then if they're going to be debriefing or they're going to share any kind of information, have to be in more than one language, because we know then it's many different people here in our community and it's many different languages in our community. So lucky enough, they was able to do the debriefs in Spanish. Only at the time, I remember when we finished this meeting, we went to one of the local tiendas, a Mexican store, in West Asheville, and I start talking with different people, letting them know that the city is going to close and it's going to be a curfew because of the pandemic. And nobody can believe me because they said, I never hear nothing about it. I haven't heard nothing in the news. I haven't heard nothing in the TV. And you think a lot of the information then is around here is usually in English. So a lot of people then speak Spanish and never feel like this information was for them. So this is where was born Asheville en Español. I remember that I used to do live streams for 2 or 3 hours, talking with people, telling them what was going on, what I hear from the city, what I hear from Medi. We used to work with Makek, so I was hearing about all the vaccination process. So it's how it was born. And for me, it was a way to speak in my first language, then it's Spanish, talking with different people and letting know about the different resources that we offer to the community, diapers, food. And later when the vaccination came, telling them where we're going to be doing vaccination events. And so grown very, very fast and very good. Probably in 2 or 3 months, we was having 5,000 people in the page and in different groups that we have. And right now we have 333,000 people in full the page, so grown good enough, and now it's related more to cultural stuff. We talk about traditional food, we talk about traditional different type of music, dance from all culture in Latin America. So, and the integration in Vilo with Asheville en Español have been very powerful because from there, like, we have other programs like Comida de Esperanza, that is a place where we can share traditional food and teach traditional food from different parts of Latin America, like pupusas from El Salvador or pollo con tajada from Honduras.
Well, you mentioned about food. So, Amy, let me ask you about the hunger situation here. I read one article that said 1 in 6 adults and 1 in 4 kids are food insecure in the mountains. And I think that article was a couple of years ago, so I can't imagine with the pandemic that it hasn't gotten worse. What is the current situation here in the community? And of course, this is leading up to ask you about the food pantries and what Beloved Asheville is doing about hunger issue.
Yes, we take hunger very seriously. And part of it is because, you know, at the center of Beloved in many ways is a table where people can come together and to support each other, and it's a table where people can share their gifts, and we know one of the ways that we create community is around sharing food. And so when we have hunger in our community, you know, that really says something about the table, right? You know, when we have an empty table. And so, you know, we really want to make sure that we are creating spaces, you know, where we can, you know, nurture and nourish our community. And that is through food access and food sovereignty. And so we have lots of projects that really focus on that. In fact, we shared 5 million pounds of food during the pandemic throughout area neighborhoods from Weaverville to Black Mountain to Candler to Arden to Asheville and everywhere in between. And we did that, you know, through our free farmers market, which we created many years ago. Over a decade ago, we started really working with community elders. And what we heard many of them say is that they struggled to access food, that they struggled to access food pantries from a transportation standpoint. Sometimes filling out forms could be hard for people, painful, embarrassing, shame-filled sometimes for people. And then what we also heard is that you know, the kind of food that people needed and wanted to nourish their bodies was not often what they could find from food pantries. And they couldn't afford it elsewhere. And that was, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables, eggs, breads, milk, things like that. And those were the very, very things that were perishable that were often, you know, coming offline at grocery stores and things like that. But food pantries didn't deal with them because they didn't want perishable food. And so we created a way to bring free farmers markets directly where, you know, people really needed the food the most. So we cut out the transportation issue, making it more accessible, cutting out the paperwork so that people, you know, felt really invited to come and didn't feel any stigma around that. We made the tables beautiful, like a free farmers market, you know, tablecloths on the tables and food in baskets and live music like you might find at a farmer's market. And we would welcome people to come and take this fresh, beautiful food that was perishable. And so, you know, rather than storing it, and why food pantries didn't want to deal with it, we, you know, got it right into the refrigerators of people that needed it the very night it was coming offline from grocery stores. And we reached out to farms and farmers. And so that model has been, you know, really thriving. And you know, many nonprofits in the area have sort of studied off that and also use that model. But we, in the pandemic, began to go directly into neighborhoods, realizing that people couldn't gather and people maybe couldn't come to us. And so we would go into impacted neighborhoods and work directly with folks that we started calling community leaders that were living in impacted neighborhoods or food deserts, as folks might describe that, places where, you know, it was hard to find fresh, healthy food. And we would throw these free farmers markets right there in the neighborhoods, bringing that food in our box truck that the community named Esperanza, which means hope in Espanol. And, you know, having neighborhood kids, you know, running to the truck and saying, Esperanza's here, and helping us because they were home from school, and seeing these really beautiful scenes of, you know, neighbor helping neighbor. And we began to really utilize that as a way to sort of knit neighbors and neighborhoods back together, as helping neighbors to know each other and support each other. And it's really helped these neighborhoods to thrive. And so we have neighborhood groups and, you know, all of these different neighborhoods. And so that's been really powerful. And then we have a project called Plants to the People. So we get plant starts and seeds out so that people can start backyard gardens or stoop gardens, or work with their neighbors to start little community gardens. And so that's a really beautiful way that people can have food sovereignty and access fresh, healthy food. And we have also a new food truck. So I might let Poncho talk about our new food truck.
Let me take a break first, and we will come back to that. That'll be our first order of business after the break. You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And we'll return with our guests in just a few minutes after this break.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, welcome back. That song is Together We Can, and that's with Pete DeLorenzo and Lucius Flux out of Atlanta. That's off their album Satellite to Satellite. And each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations, locally, nationally, and internationally, who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our guests today are Pancho Bermejo and Amy Cantrell. They are the co-directors at Beloved Asheville. So, yes, before the break, we were talking about the issue of hunger in the community, and Pancho was getting ready to speak about the food truck, I believe.
Yeah, I guess at the time when, like, the story that was sharing Amy, when we were sharing food in different communities, what we realized is that not every people in the community eat the same kind of food. So we usually was taking food related to the community that we was going. So we was going to the Black community, we take this specific food that people cook, and if we was going to the Brown community, we was taking this specific food then. Brown, or in the other side, white communities eat too. So from there, like, we was taking the decision, like, seeing all the pandemic, became a group of people and decide to come together with us, and we start doing different events to raise money to buy diapers. So the name of the group was called Comida de Esperanza. So I remember that at this time, like, we used to raise some money, and all the money was directly to buying the diapers or school supplies or whatever needed. We was finding in a community, we was trying to figure out ways to raise money, and in the same way, we were raising money with other people in the community to help different people. So from there was born the idea of having a food truck, because was many people then want to be sharing the tradition that they have, and was a place of healing at the time too, because in the middle of the time then we're not supposed to be together, we find a way to be together outside and start healing ourselves, because it was a very lonely time. So from there was born La Cocina de Mamá, that is the name of the food truck that we have now, where we cook traditional food. Like, for example, a couple of weeks ago, we have tamales, tacos, and different type of food. So some of the more beautiful part of all this is that a lot of the Latino community sometimes are cooking and they are serving people in our own house. So I think that having very beautiful thing to see, then these two communities is supporting to share, because when you know how it feels, that you have to do something to make less worse the situation of other people. So I think that having very inspiring to see all this, and having see how from the pandemic, all this beautiful thing was born and was not only bad things.
Pancho, how long have you been with Beloved Asheville?
I think then probably, so I guess I met Amy in, I think it was 2013. So from there, like, we started doing different stuff together. We used to play music together. And later we decided we live in an intentional community. So we decided to start living together because we have the same vision. So probably have been like 6-7 years.
So talk to me about for yourself, and I'll ask Amy afterwards, what are the personal rewards that you get out of your work with Beloved Asheville?
So it's many different rewards. I can tell you that I am VIP in different places. People invite us to be VIP in many different places. For example, the other day, then we were sharing food in Lake Sister. We was sharing food, and for us it's very important to be there, because from there, like, you start and knowing the different things that you can do later on, or what is the need, or what is the way that you have to move next. So in one point, one person came and started saying that last year she had a birthday for her kid and nobody showed up for the party. So she was crying. And the fear instinct that everybody then was sharing food with the community was to go and hug her. So I think it was one of the more powerful moments that I have been experienced, that people let everything besides to give support to this person. So we was lucky enough that she invited us to be part of the party. This happened, the party of her daughter happened last week. And was an amazing party. I enjoy it. They have amazing food. They have piñatas. They have different things there that make me feel very, very lucky to be there, and make me feel VIP. I was thinking I was VIP, like, the mother invited me to be in this party. So I can tell you then In the middle of the pandemic, we met another person called Marta, and she invited us this Saturday to be in the 25th anniversary of the wedding. So she's gonna wedding again with Carlos, then he's the husband. So I can tell you that we have been all these invitations to be VIP, and it's one of the things that I enjoy more, because a lot of times my mama used to tell me then, you really know when you are part of the family when people invite you to the parties.
Very good. What about you, Amy? What are some of the personal rewards that you get out of your work?
Well, I think as Pancho said, you know, it's a very different understanding of what it means to be a VIP. You know, for us, it's about going into communities that others might label as, you know, deeply struggling, and be invited to sit at somebody's table, or know the family cat, you know, or just be in these really special moments, sometimes in these really, really hard moments of tragedy, you know, to be invited in to sit and be present. We had a gentleman that was going blind, and so we walked that journey with him, and we met him through one of our free farmers markets. One of our families would take food to him because the husband of this family had worked together for a long time, and then this gentleman couldn't work anymore. And this family took him in and just were very present to him. And so there's these moments where you're just seeing the sheer beauty of humanity amidst the suffering. And that for me is a great reward. Sometimes I just pinch myself and say, like, wow, I get to be a part of experiencing this. And places where I might, you know, in my trajectory of my life may not have ever gotten to be a part of a particular community. And I think that's one of the things that I love about Be Loved. You know, we take our name from Dr. King's vision of the beloved community, where we began to come together across lines of difference. And we create a space where we all are in it together. And there's just a lot of beauty, you know, on the way to creating that in a large sort of macro sense. We get to do that in these small glimpses every day. We get to be inside that beloved community where people are a part of each other and connected.
Do you have a specific location where you meet, or how does that work?
That's a really good question. So we had a house, an over 100-year-old house that we rented in downtown that we were in for 10 years. And just before the pandemic, the landlord decided to sell the house. And so we went on this sort of journey. So that was December of 2019. And of course, just a few months later, the pandemic happened. And so we decided to go spaceless and just sort of be out in the community. And that was largely influenced by, you know, our work with street medics, where we would go out to people. And then our response, there was a large ICE raid some years ago where we went out directly into the community because we heard people were afraid to leave their homes. And so we were taking food and Know Your Rights information out. And just sort of our lived experience of walking in communities, whether it's in, you know, public housing communities or wherever people would welcome us. And so we said, you know, this is the work right now, is going to where people need us the most. And you know, I was thinking about, you know, the rewards. And one of my great rewards was knowing a community elder named Queen Mother, who an African-American elder. She lived right down the street from our first location. And she just became such a big part of our hearts. And she crossed over to be with the ancestors just about a year and a half ago. And so she was just had such a special heart for community and toward making people just feel so special. If you were in her presence, you were the most special person on the earth. And yeah, I try to really emulate that every day to share with whoever I'm with, you know, their worthiness, their beauty, and she loved to cook for the community. And so La Cocina de Mama, or Mama's Kitchen, is our food truck, and it was named in honor of her. She had a really powerful, I asked her how she got the name Queen Mother, and she said that she was one day praying for her children, and she sort of heard this voice, this divine voice say to her, all the children in the world are your children, and you should love them all. And she took that very seriously. And it became sort of this call to community. And so she was a woman that really, you know, she loved every person she met, and she crossed, you know, into all these different communities and was very intersectional in her being and the way that she walked in the world. And her spirit was just infectious and lifted people up. And so I really aspire to sort of live in that vein, is that, you know, when we create community, is really, really helping people feel seen and loved and a part. So that sense of belonging, and out of that, just beautiful things can come, because, you know, so many of our people talk about how, you know, nobody saw them in their giftedness and nobody asked them to share their gifts. And so we do that in very powerful ways. And what we find is that, you know, incredibly powerful things happen when we invite people to stand in their gifts and to connect with each other. And, you know, as much as there's a lot of, you know, tragic and horrendous things happening in the world right now, what we don't hear in a thunderous way are the really amazing good stories of how people are coming together to support and show up for each other, and creating innovative solutions together for their own communities. And that's the story of Be Loved.
There is a lot of good going on out there that we don't hear about. Let me take a station ID here. You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. We come to you every week at 103.7 and can be streamed at WPVMFM.org. The girls who made them cry, those hard-faced queens of misadventure. God knows what is hiding in those weak and sunken lines. Fiery thrones of muted angels giving love but getting nothing back. Oh, help the people, and if you're homesick, give me your hand and I'll hold it. People, help the people. Okay, that's Birdie singing People Help the People from her album titled Birdie. Okay, today we are talking to Amy Cantrell and Pancho Bermejo. They are co-directors at Be Loved Asheville. Pancho is an activist and Indigenous Latinx community organizer, and is also Be Loved's media expert. And he has been given awards for his community work by the Asheville Area Arts Council and CoThink. And Amy has been active in community organizing for more than 30 years, and she's the founder of Be Loved Asheville. She has spent 3 decades working to build intersectional community, creating mutual aid networks, and creating social change. So let me ask you, I remember probably more about this from our previous interview, Amy, about the Street Medic program and how that got started. I wanted to kind of have you guys talk about that, and then also about the arts program before the show ends. So take it away, if you could talk about the Street Medic program.
Sure. You know, we talk about people standing in their giftedness, and I love that song, People Helping the People, you know, and all the songs today really, really fit so well with the theme, McNair, and really have, you know, inspired me today. And one of the things that we see a lot of times is that in the wake of these moments, sometimes of tragedy, they become catalysts for people coming together and doing something that's bigger than all of them. And our Street Medic team is one of those real good examples. Back in the fall of 2016, we had a friend sadly freeze to death here in Asheville. She died in her red sleeping bag down on the river. And she had been a Jane Doe for 5 days until the police came to our door and asked if we could identify a body for them. And that was just such a tragic day in the heart of our community. And so there was a small group that met every week. The year before, Asheville first had declared a housing crisis here. So in 2015, and that group was a group of people who were experiencing the housing crisis and felt like their voices hadn't been heard. in the conversation. And so we began to meet to really center the voices of different people living through the housing crisis, whether it was African-American communities feeling like they were gentrified, being gentrified out of Asheville, or elders on fixed incomes who didn't know if they could afford the rent increase that they were experiencing, or people that literally were on the streets. And so that group had come together to begin to advocate for the changes that we needed to see in our communities. And it was in that group that Janet's death, Janet Jones, our friend who froze to death, really came to sort of a climax when somebody in that group said, what are we going to do about this? And I think it's such a powerful question. And I'll emphasize or highlight the word we. What are we going to do about this? Not what's the government going to do, they said, or some agency, but what are we in this room going to do? And if I could, I would invite the listeners to hear that question and that statement from somebody living through the impacts of the housing crisis, because, you know, when we decide to do something about it, things change. When we put our minds and hearts and gifts into the work of wanting something to be different, we do create a better world. And so people began saying, you know, what it was that people needed. And so people said, we need to know what to do in a medical emergency if that should occur, because we're the closest people to each other. And so we began to talk about, what if we could have a street medic team? And we immediately looked at each other. It's something that has been a real powerful lesson at Beloved, is we often look to somebody else. And as Poncha would say a lot, we are the people. We have to keep remembering that. And so instead of bringing in outsiders to do the work, we asked EMTs and nurses and doctors to actually train people who were living through the housing crisis to know what to do. And so we began to train every week. So 4 months after Janet's death, we had a group of people who were living through the housing crisis being trained as street medics. And that program's still going today, and that group goes out on rounds and checks on the health and well-being of people who are living on the streets, and providing care and also connections to larger healthcare institutions. And we often find we have healthcare institutions, but from the door out, there's sort of this great divide where people often don't know about those resources or how to access those. And so we want to make connections. And that work has grown and really increased into other communities that we also saw really suffering from a lack of access to healthcare. And so our street medic, the idea of street medics and supporting each other from a health standpoint, is also sort of moved out into the other communities, African-American communities, Latinx communities that we work with, and teaching youth how to care for each other. And so it's also really taken on a life outside of Asheville. So there's lots of communities across the country that have come here to look at the street medic team and learn how to do this. Our street medics have talked to national audiences about this work. And
I was going to ask you if you've gotten inquiries from around the country about the program.
Absolutely. And what we heard our people saying is, you know, nobody ever, you know, fed our brains before. And people really like doing this work of caring for people. And I think we too often discount people's abilities, right, to learn things in the medical field. Or right now we're working with the Plastic Free WNC Coalition to ban the plastic bag. And so we've been doing that with impacted communities. And often people said, oh, poor people need plastic bags. And often what we've, you know, seen is that people that are struggling in poverty and communities of color are, you know, first impacted by the effects of climate change. And so are really clear that we need to create a sustainable and renewable future, and have been expert at using what's around them and not wasting resources for a long time and living with a low impact on the earth. And so those are very indigenous ways of living, is how do we live, you know, and thinking that the earth is our kin. And so many projects have sort of been born in just the way that the street medics are born, seeing a struggle that is common in the community and saying, what are we going to do about this? And believing that we have gifts to bring to the table. And really, you know, BLove's job is in resourcing these wonderful people that are impacted with the tools they need to do this work of community change.
Well, we're getting towards the end of the program, but I wanted to ask briefly, Pancho, could you kind of talk about the outreach to the artists in the community and what that's about?
Yeah, we always try to invite everybody in the community that have any artistic expression to be part of this work, because we know then a lot of the solutions is going to come from the main of somebody that can think outside of the box. So having very powerful to see many artists came in the many different projects that we have, like for example in the houses that we are building right now, we have different artists from different parts of the country that is donating pieces of art to decorate the house or to use it in the house. We have lamps, we have chairs, we have tables that was created from people from Philadelphia, from Chicago, from Arkansas, and they send us all this art to decorate the houses that we have and then we are building. We are part of the Furniture Society of North America, and they're going to be helping us, we hope, then with all the many other projects that we're going to have. And something of the very powerful thing is that we're going to be in a conference this summer. We are going to Louisiana, and we're going to be talking about what is very important for artists to be involved in many different projects and how us, like no profit, create spaces for people that have creative minds being part of the solution that have to happen in the community. Like I said, being an artist myself too, I understand that we need people that can create a different world that is not in this line, that is not in this box, something that is outside, something that can create a revolution from the idea that is outside of what we think that is the right way to think. So and in the same time, we have Rises Studio. We invite people that never have the opportunity to have an exhibition or never have the opportunity to exhibit the art than they make. We create exhibition for people to exhibit and make some money in these exhibitions too.
Well, so how can I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. We're just getting close to the end of the hour. If people want to become a volunteer with BLove Asheville, or they want to know more about the programs, how can they find out about that?
Oh, they can go. You can look us in all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, with BLove Asheville. And you can go to the website in BLoveAsheville.com, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, or you can send us an email directly to BLoveAsheville@gmail.com.
Amy, you've got a couple of events coming up in the near future. Would you like to mention those?
Oh, absolutely. We have some wonderful events coming up, one of which is our Raise Another Home auction to benefit our BLove Villages project, where we're building villages of deeply affordable homes with equity to help lift people out of poverty. They're craft built by volunteers. And so this year we're here to celebrate. We raised $120,000 toward homes in the BLove Village last year that are going up right now, and we are about to recreate. So that's the theme of the auction and gathering is celebrate, recreate. You can check it out on our website at BLoveAsheville.com. There's a link directly to our auction site where you can buy tickets for the May 6th event, Saturday, May 6th at 5:00. And we're going to check out auction items. They'll go live on May the 3rd.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. Our guests today have been Pancho Bermejo and Amy Cantrell, co-directors at BLove Asheville. Thank you, folks, for being on the show. All the best to you.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World.
are listening to